Now back to the Green Architects Lounge.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is the Green Architects Lounge. This is probably part two of the ventilation podcast.
It definitely is part two.
All right, it's definitely part two. We've refreshed our drinks. We're back at it. We've got Sonia Barrantes. I'm sorry.
Barrantes.
Barrantes.
Is that too much of a roll?
No, that's
Barrantes.
Great.
Barrantes. Barrantes. Yeah. All right. So, Sonia, now, let's see, we've covered HRVs, ERVs, whatever. Oh, we were going to talk about different kinds of ERVs and HRVs. You want to do that before we get into
it? Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that.
Because, like, we, you know, sort of off mic, we started talking about, different products we know. Phil, you started with the Lunos.
But, I mean, just to generalize, some of the products that we typically spec.
Yeah.
So, Sonia mentioned the product called Zender.
Yeah.
Which is a favorite. It's a favorite of the passive house crowd. It's because it's high efficiency.
Yeah.
And low energy efficiency.
And
is
they'll
a big
come out.
Deal.
They'll come out and commission it themselves, or Zender will come out, and you get a high level of confidence with that.
I also do designs. So if you send them your floor plans, they will locate supply and exhaust.
You don't need an engineer.
Their rainbow vision. Right. Yeah. They will place everything for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They're not the cheapest system.
No. But you get.
Well, put it this way: they're not the cheapest system, but they are the most expensive.
Okay. Well said.
Right.
Well said. And then there's a slew of others, from Venmar.
Venmar is a really good system. We use that a lot, and it's got pretty low energy.
Yeah.
Renew Air.
There's another one.
Is it Ultimate Air? Is that one? There was one.
I think so. There's also, I think, Fantech does.
Fantech,
well.
More affordable,
even
higher
American
loads.
American Standard has some. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Enough said.
Yeah.
They're not the most expensive.
No.
There you go.
And there's a few fairly new players on the market. Yeah, Air Pahota is one. Chris.
Yeah.
You said you've just specified that recently.
I'm kind of excited about this fella. So the Air Pahota is like it's a pretty cool device. It's bigger than like your other ones. So hey, architects, you better plan for that.
Bigger is better.
That's what I've.
That's what she said.
I'm so glad you said that, Sonia. But like a Zender, the main trunks of supply and return come off the unit and they go to a manifold and then are dispersed in little Zender-like tubes, which are, my rule of thumb. We'll talk about rule of thumbs later, but I always have like 12 CFM. Per tube. That's just like in my head. You tell me if I'm wrong or not later. Or
that is correct.
All right. Yeah, sweet. All right. So, but the cool part about this unit is that it's got these baffles in it. You're going to talk about the Lunos probably in a little bit, where it reverses the flow of the air. So one of the problems that you have, let's just pick a Venmar, your typical Venmar unit. If it's 0 degrees outside and it's been running for a while, well, that core is going to get cold, very cold. It's going to freeze up on you, and the unit detects that, and so it runs in recirculation mode. It shuts down, shuts off its connection to the outside, and just recirculates interior air through the core until it thaws out, and that's a little bit of an energy loss in that, and having that. The Air Pahota has this very complex series of baffles within the core, so it will actually reverse the flow of air through the core without reversing the air, the supply and return in the house. So it will just, without you knowing, it will just switch direction through the core to keep it the right temperature. So it can operate continuously down to super, super cold temperatures. It also has a different filters in it. If you imagine an HRV filters being something impermeable, like metal, like a bunch of metal straws, put together so close that they're, imparting their heat on one another. And in an ERV, that filters like Tyvek, where that moisture can.
It's a heat exchanger, though, not a filter.
A heat exchanger. Thank you,
yeah, you're
professor,
welcome.
Doctor. I don't know. No. And so the Air Pahota has both of these. So it knows the relative humidity of the air going in, going out, and coming in from the house and going and being supplied to the house, and it will switch to an HRV filter or an ERV filter. It'll switch direction as it sees it, and it will link to your sleek new iPad, touch device that, you can go in and check on it whenever you want. So, yeah, it's really neat.
It's not cheap.
It's not cheap, and it's from the Czech Republic. So
it's, efficiency-wise, isn't it like a 96% efficiency?
It's one of those classic sliding scales. It depends on when you, you know, which test you look at. But basically, I mean, we're seeing it. It's definitely 90 and 90 plus is where that fellow is falling. So, but you know, in the last house we just did, and it's the one and only install I've ever done of it, the low end is low, a little too low. We need to bump it up. But the cool part is that the software, I mean, it's like you can tweak it. I could tweak it if I wanted, you know, which is scary. It's not that simple. I shouldn't say it's that simple. You need to know what you're doing. But, yeah, there you go. So that Air Pagoda. Boom.
So there's this other new product that it's called the CERV, Conditioning Energy Recovery Ventilator.
Right, which is exciting.
It's super exciting. It's the magic box that they've had overseas years. It's kind of like the first chance that us Americans have had to use something like this.
Right.
And honestly, I don't know that much about it. I've talked about using it with another builder. They've only sold about 50 units so far. It essentially uses an air source heat pump, and it can provide conditioning up to about 8,000 BTUs,
which is cooling to about
5,000.
That's sizable for your passive house. If you're in a tight house, and especially in our cold climate, geez, that's all you would need.
So it's like the American version of the Nylon.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
And we'll put a link to that because there's an article on GBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
About it. And we'll put that on the side. Check out the side over there.
It's very interesting because it basically modulates itself. It can turn on and off when it decides that you need fresh air. And it also can detect contaminants in the air.
No way.
Yeah.
From high pollution.
Yes.
Yeah. From high pollution events? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So stay tuned for this. It's pretty interesting. Cool. Right now they're not super cheap, but you know, I think it's about $8,000 to $10,000 or so for an install.
That's like a Zender though. A little more.
But this one has conditioning.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's just another one that's coming on that, you know, people are thinking about this stuff, and there's some better answers out there on their way.
So is that demand controlled ventilation? Because you said it turns on and off as you need it. So demand controlled ventilation, I forgot, in my ideal.
Yeah.
It would have that. So basically you can have a CO2 monitor somewhere in the house, and what it can do is, and Zender will do this, actually anything that, you know, takes an input signal, as the carbon dioxide goes up, you have a party.
Yeah.
Phil's making drinks.
Yes.
That happens.
It ramps up your ventilation, and then everybody leaves and the carbon dioxide levels come down and it ramps the ventilation down. So demand controlled ventilation is really
cool.
Really cool.
And so, go ahead, Phil.
From Green Building Advisor. By all accounts, the CERV solves a lot of problems without using much energy. It provides balanced ventilation. It's smart enough to stop ventilating when the indoor air is clean. It increases the ventilation rate when the CO2 level rises. For example, when there are 20 people in the house for a party. Thank you, Sonia.
Wow.
You're reading Martin Holiday's mind here.
Yeah.
And decreases the ventilation rate when the CO2 level falls. For example, when the house is unoccupied.
Mm-hmm.
Smart.
Smart. Man, it's going to be... The future's bright, Phil. Sonia.
Isn't it?
It's going to be great.
We're going to talk about the Lunos.
Lunos. That's
Sonia, what can you tell us about the Lunos?
Well, the Lunos is basically they're paired ceramic core fans. So they're great for retrofit because you can just put them right through the wall. There's no ductwork. And what happens is they take turns. So one sucks, the other blows.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're exhausting air, it heats up the ceramic core.
Yeah.
And then it reverses direction and the air comes in and the ceramic core discharges its heat to that air. So they tend to be fairly expensive for the CFM, but in the right application where you don't have room to run ductwork or it's a retrofit, like we talked about. So 15, I think we said, Phil, 20 CFM.
15, 20, yep.
So, you know, in an average size house, let's say 2,500 square feet, 3 bedrooms, you need about 105 CFM. So, and you said it's about $1,000 a pair.
Right.
So it's starting to get up to the level of a... Of a Zender.
Right. But then you talk about no ductwork.
No ductwork.
Yeah. $1,000, and you poke it through a few holes in the wall.
There can be some times when you really need to ventilate a space and you can't get ductwork too. That might be a way to do it.
And it could be great for a room by room, you know, a bonus room or something like that, where you don't run on the ductwork.
And that was a great segue to talking about how much ventilation do you supply to your people or spaces, because you just rattled off a real quick, dare I say, rule of thumb.
Well, I had some cheat sheets. Okay. So,
yeah. But so Sonia, all right. So, what's your rule of thumb for deciding how much CFM do I supply? How do I know what to?
Well, I start with the code, right? Yeah. So, you know, for ASHRAE, it's number of bedrooms plus one is the number of people, and a certain CFM per person, and then CFM per square foot. So I just rattled off that rule of thumb, but I got some numbers. So 2,500 square foot house, three bedrooms, 105 CFM.
Okay.
1,000 square foot house, two bedrooms, 53 CFM. So you can kind of see the levels.
Right.
And this is for fresh air coming into the house.
Right. This is continuous?
Continuous fresh air.
Right.
Right. And the thing to remember, though, is like there's the spirit again, and then there's the letter.
Right.
So if I wanted, I could put a closet in my house and bring in 105 CFM and exhaust it out of that closet, and technically I'm bringing in the right amount of supply air to my house.
Wow. That is awful.
It's awful. But it's not getting to my occupants. So when we're talking about, you know, the mixing and Rob Aldrich, these are the things that we as architects and engineers need to make sure that we're considering. That it's not just, oh, I brought 105 CFM into the house. It's where I brought it in, and did it mix, and is it going to be cold on my occupants? And
right. Is it the right thing to do?
Right, because if it's uncomfortable, they're going to turn it off.
Yeah.
So.
And they're going to call us and complain.
Right.
And we'll have to explain ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. How many times do people install HRVs or ERVs and they just get turned off because they make a lot of noise, and
or
it's like the summertime, they turn it off and they forget to turn it back on when they close the windows.
Right. Or I don't know if you've ever, you know, I'm sure you have, Phil, you know, gone back and done some form of commissioning one way or another on a house, and like this last house with Air Pahota I just mentioned, you know, we learned, we need to turn this thing up, you know, it's not supplying what we thought it would. It just needs to be tweaked a little, which is great that the unit can handle that. But how many times, you know, I think about in the past, I have several houses where we installed an ERV, pat ourselves on the back, good job. And, you know, we followed the plan. Did we go back and do a duct blaster thing? Did we figure out exactly what the flow is out of each one of these ports going in and out of the unit? No. So, yeah, is it okay? Probably.
Yeah, we've done that. You know how many times we've done that? Once. That's the honest truth, that we rely on folks doing the right thing, but we don't really know if they are doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did it turn out when you went back and checked?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty good.
You know, pretty good, but we made an adjustment, maybe?
We made a couple adjustments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a good... I'm just throwing that out there. It's a good thing to do. It's a learning experience, especially when you know, the numbers are lower than you thought, significantly, in a couple places. You say, whoa. What happened here?
Well, it's really, I mean, it's going to be a cultural change, right? So right now, you get your furnace checked every year.
Yeah.
Well, eventually that might be that once a year, your HVAC specialist comes and checks the balance on your system. It's called continuous commissioning, right?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
You never stop checking on it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. But there's got to be a fear factor involved to inspire people to do it. It's either going to cost them money or health.
Right.
Right.
Otherwise, fine.
Or comfort, but that's probably not going to happen.
No, I think they'll be less attuned to comfort.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, again, Lawrence Berkeley National Labs, in their study, they found that the health-related deaths due to indoor air quality rivals traffic accidents and infectious diseases.
No.
Totally.
Wow.
Those guys don't lie.
Wow.
They're serious nerds. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was the fact of the podcast right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Scared straight. Commission your HRV.
Yeah. And install them.
Install them
in the first place. Yeah. How about that?
Great. Let's talk about this balanced system. Sonia, I've got this great house, and it's airtight, and then I've got this awesome Zender or Air Pahota, you know, system, and then I walk over to my 1600 CFM Viking range hood, and I turn that sucker on, and my eardrums pop. What do we do? How do we handle makeup air? How do we handle the imbalance that we as users put on this?
Well, the first thing I would do as an architect is try to convince my client that they do not actually need 1600 CFM.
Amen. Right. Amen.
Then if you lose that battle, by code, you need to, if you're exhausting more than 400 CFM on your range hood, you have to provide a dedicated makeup air system that is actually interlocked with your range hood. So that means when your range hood turns on,
the makeup
air system comes on.
Right.
But that's from the International Mechanical Code 2009. So the International Energy Conservation Code 2009 also says that the mandatory air tightness at AC or at 50 pascals is, anyone want to guess?
Seven.
Has to be less than seven.
Seven. Okay. I knew that.
So if 400 CFM at a 7 ACH 50 house is where you have to put in makeup air.
Dang.
Well, now we have a 0.6 or a 1 ACH 50 house. I think logically you can understand that it's going to be much less than 400 CFM.
Yeah.
We have to worry about makeup air. And I think later we're going to talk about all the bad things that can happen when you negatively pressurize your house.
Right. Well, I think we're there now.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. So, so if you're, so let's say that happens. I mean, it is very easy to find a range hood that goes, you know, 300, 500, 900, you know, CFM, 600 CFM. Easy as pie. I could go.
Right. Especially if you're putting a range over an island. It's got to suck from all sides.
Oh, and... So let's talk about now.
Range hoods are kind of get like amped up about it, right? So So here's the thing: is if you're cooking with a gas range top, you need to exhaust to the outside,
right?
So this whole passive house recirculating range hoods, exhausting from the kitchen. If you have a gas range, you need to exhaust to the outside. And that's because all the nasty stuff that comes from combustion products of gas.
Yeah, right. So boom.
Don't screw around.
Right. Not even if you're not even on this blog. You know, energy efficient in mind. You just have a gas.
Right. You need to direct vent to the outside. Mm-hmm. So if you have a tight house, whether or not you have a balanced ventilation system, you need a makeup air system that is separate from that.
Gotcha.
Right? You can get away with, typically, you could probably get away. So you need minimum 100 CFM. Even in a tight house, you can probably get away with that as a direct vent. Passive house, you're on the line.
Right.
You know, so 100, 150, you're probably okay. Once you start talking the 300 CFM fans, you need to really look at it. And I actually had a friend, Andrew Calise, you might know him, Strategic Energy Group. So he's blower door testing a development around in the greater Portland area. And he came to me and said, these houses are so tight. And they're not passive houses. They're just
tight.
They're just tight. He's concerned that they're not getting the natural ventilation. So we go in there and we're doing a walk around and I see that they have gas fireplaces. And I was like,
whoa.
So they're going with exhaust only. So, so we're basically, I helped him calculate based on the tightness of the house, what they should set the exhaust only bathroom fan to make sure they're getting their required ventilation. Then I see this gas fireplace and I say, wait a second. So we have this continuous exhaust only fan. And let's say they put in a 600 CFM range hood or a 300 CFM range hood.
Oh man.
So you have to think about that, you know, so I asked him to run the blower door up and negatively pressurize the house equivalent to what the possible CFM could be.
Right.
And then read the negative pressurization. So put 350 CFM out the blower door and then see what your pressure in the house is. And so there's different ranges for if you have like a closed combustion. So if you have a natural gas water heater that gets its air from the outside and it's piped to the water
heater. It's closed, right.
It's closed. Mm-hmm. You can go fairly negative. Mm. If you have an open combustion, which could be a fireplace or a wood stove, anything like that, you can't go much more than 5 pascals before you're looking at potentially backdrafting very nasty stuff into the house.
And 5 pascals, I'm just winging it.
It's like, not hard.
That's like, you can get 5 pascals at like maybe 70 CFM.
Depends how tight your house is.
Yeah. I mean, that's easy. So. In that scenario, what would be a solution? This kitchen hood exhaust, let's say it cranks at 150 CFM, which is respectable, CFM. But if you've got a gas fireplace over there, then you're going to say, well, maybe you should put in a vent with a damper that's actuated when this thing goes on.
My sense is you're not going to like the just crack a window idea.
Right. Well, I mean, you can do that, but the one thing you can't control is occupant behavior.
Right.
Right. So the first owner might be like, don't worry about it. I'll crack a window every time.
Right.
But then the next owner may not.
Right.
So this is actually, if I were forced into a situation, I might put a trickle vent.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And once you get above certain CFMs, you actually have to power the air in. Right. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people bring the air in the basements, so that it mixes before it comes up.
Right.
So it's just, all I can say is the way you solve the problem, you have lots of ways to solve the problem, but you have to be aware that is a problem.
Yeah.
That could be a problem. So you're building super tight houses, you know, there's the Viking range hood, 1200 CFM, 300 CFM, you need to think about it.
Right.
There's a very simple answer to this.
don't put them in.
Yeah, just eat out every night.
Yeah.
Or order in. Order in is okay, too.
Yeah. Stop cooking.
This is the Germans.
Well, you can do now, if we go to the electric cooktop.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
I was going to say.
There's still some products, but you put a recircling range hood.
Yeah.
You get the grease and the smoke out, and then you let your balanced ventilation system
handle the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's a great passive house strategy.
Right. I mean, do passive houses use gas?
No.
To cook?
No, absolutely not.
Right, so you just don't see it.
Right.
Yeah, does not happen.
Yep. So if someone is their heart set on a gas cooktop, you need to direct vent, and you just need to make
it appropriately. So I was at a conference, I think it was the Passive House North America conference, and I forget who was talking, but they referenced a guy from Zender who was in the room who had this idea. Maybe you were there.
Probably Aubrey Guerre, maybe.
May have been.
I don't know if I'm butchering that, ironically.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. But whoever this genius was, he had come up with the idea of taking those downdraft ranges, the Gen Air mm-hmm. or whatever, and just hacking that, using that same ductwork. He put an actuator on it mm-hmm. and just made it so when the hood goes on, the actuator opens, and so the air comes out boom, right there at the makeup air is coming, mm-hmm. Into the house at the Gen Air location,
nice.
Right next to the burner. So it just goes right under the cook surface,
so it
just
cools
your
food right off as you're cooking.
Yeah, right.
I'm pretty sure that there's a product.
There should be.
That Zender makes that's not available here.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's.
I know a little bit about it.
Oh, you're saying this like
you're being so coy. He's being coy about it.
I think he is. Well, Phil is in the know with the Zender higher ups.
He's in the
inner circle. Well, you don't have to share with us.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll turn off the mic and you'll tell me all about this super
Perhaps. Secret
product. That's fantastic.
Perhaps.
And while I'm on it, here's my, I have a hot zig or a six-digit idea.
Okay.
Which we have every once in a while.
Zig away.
It's probably a hot zig because I don't know if you'd make six-digit or something. No, you know what? It's a six-digit idea for the first company like GE or Whirlpool or one of those guys. I mean, how simple would it be? You've got a dryer that exhausts. Why not have a dryer that also supplies and exhausts to the outside? I mean, it's just its own contained air unit. So, like, you turn it on and it doesn't affect your envelope, your air volume. You can seal the ductwork and just it's its own thing. Wouldn't that be genius?
That doesn't exist?
No,
it exists on the commercial.
Does it?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
And it's somebody making six digits on.
I'm sure they're making six digits.
All my six digit ideas are already.
So you're talking about essentially like a sealed wood stove or sealed fireplace that has an outside air intake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a number of residential products mm-hmm. or projects where it's time to choose the dryer. What dryer should I choose? And there's always a certain number of CFM that thing's going to eject from your house.
Yeah, well, I'm actually super excited because Jake found a heat pump dryer. Have you heard of these?
Oh, yes.
Won a technology award last year.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
I've heard they're pretty cool, but they take a really long time to dry.
Well, the condensing dryers definitely take a long time to dry.
Oh, that's the condensing dryer.
I was going to say, this is different.
I think the heat pump is different.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
I'm very excited to hear about that.
Yeah, but I listened to your Allison Bales podcast.
Yes,
and
yes.
I almost drove off the road. I was so excited because he mentioned the second law of thermodynamics, which happens to be a favorite of mine as well. And so as soon as I get some free time, I'm going to look at that from a second law point of view, because if you're stealing heat from the house, a passive house, to dry your clothes, then
you are...
it's not necessarily a good thing. But the potential is really there.
Right. We must have been talking about my cool climate refrigerator idea at that point.
Right.
I don't know.
All right, that's all right.
I'm not sure.
We won't go into that later. You guys will have to plow through the archives to find that idea. But anyway,
you have a question right here, Chris. That said wood stoves and fireplaces. Are we still doing those?
Yeah, we are. We've got clients who want them, and I'm in that position where we are heavily persuading them not to mm-hmm. when it's a super tight
house. Have you been successful?
Well, we got to fight here.
Because I've lost that fight.
I've lost that fight.
Why say no? They're wonderful things. We have to get an air intake.
I feel like we've had this conversation on the podcast.
It's such a great elemental thing to have a fire in
mm-hmm.
your house.
Yeah, I am a caveman inside and it wants maybe a fire and it's...
A caveman with great hair.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So
cavemen never got gray hair because they never lived that long. Is that what you're trying to say back in the day?
I just don't think they had gel.
Oh, okay, yeah, right. So,
I think she said great hair, not gray.
Oh.
Yeah, great hair. But well.
Thank you, Sonia.
You're welcome.
I'll be very straight.
Well, the thing to think about is, what are they building the house for? If they're telling me they're building an energy efficient house and they put a fireplace in, I'd be like, well, it's not energy efficient, but if you want a fireplace, okay.
Right.
So Zender, which again, I'm partial to Zender.
Yeah.
They have what's called like fireplace protection mode.
Wow.
So what happens is if your fireplace starts to negatively pressurize your house because it's, you know, it's pulling combustion air.
It's drafting, yeah.
The Zender will stop sucking air out of the house.
Wow.
It does some magic thing, and it basically you tell the Zender on the control panel that you in fact have a fireplace or a wood stove, and it will monitor the pressurization of the house, and it will stop sucking.
I think that's pretty brilliant.
I think that's the second biggest fact of the podcast.
That's great.
Right there.
Yeah.
That's nice.
That's a 5-digit idea at least.
Oh yeah, at least. So that's wonderful to know, and I wonder if other ERVs will pick up on that.
And I don't know that other ones don't. I just know that Zender does. So
what do you think, like, the CFM output of fireplaces? I don't know. I bet somewhere on the archives we can GBA. Someone brilliant has said that. Martin probably knows.
Yeah.
If you were here.
He knows everything.
Yeah. But again, there's another point where we have to provide makeup air usually. But you're thinking you can use the Zender mode.
Well, I'm not saying that you can use the Zender to provide the makeup air, because it's balanced ventilation. So by definition, it doesn't provide makeup air. Right.
Interesting. Well, see, I thought, okay, this is a great conversation. So ERVs, they can go out of balance, right,
mm-hmm.
to a certain degree, which I thought the rule of thumb was half of their rated CFM. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I'm running the dryer, mm-hmm. if the dryer is ejecting at 50 CFM, mm-hmm. then my ERV can probably handle that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's supplying more than it itself is exhausting. It's using mm-hmm. the dryer to do mm-hmm. that exhaust. So its efficiency is going to go down, that air is going to be closer to the outdoor temperature as that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So a dryer is not as crucial if your ERV can handle that bump. But if I'm running the dryer and I turn on the kitchen exhaust, and I have a fire in the fireplace, then I might be like 150, 200, 300 CFM, and that may be beyond the entire capacity of the ERV. So you need makeup air for those things. Right.
I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head what the limits are for the ERV. And if you think about it, it is a hole through your wall. Right?
Yeah.
So even if none of the fans are running, you have a direct connection to the outside.
Right.
So if you pull hard enough, you'll probably be able to pull makeup air through the ERV.
Gotcha.
But I don't think that we shouldn't design to that.
Right.
So.
Right. So if we have a client, what's your recommendation for? I have that client who mm-hmm. says, I want a wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have a wood stove. I have this wood lot. I want to mm-hmm. just whatever. I want that caveman feeling of fire.
Mm-hmm.
On these days, even though I say, well, you're gonna cook yourself out of your room, but that's fine if you want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think in that case, I would probably consider some sort of makeup air damper that opens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could put a temperature sensor in the chimney.
Oh.
And when it gets above a certain temperature,
uh-huh.
it opens a damper. But keep in mind that the more complex,
right.
the more you have to maintain, the more things break.
Mm-hmm.
I might do something like that, but bring it into the house somewhere where it's not going to be a direct draft on somebody.
Right.
So somewhere it can mix before it gets into the house.
So Sonia, at what point should someone hire a mechanical engineer?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Do you need a mechanical engineer in the house?
Well, yeah, because houses, I mean, like if you and I were doing a commercial building, we're hiring a mechanical engineer.
Yeah, we got to have one.
It's just way too much to handle. But there are tons of houses get built without...
Yeah, most of them. And,
yeah.
you know, Chris and I, we consider ourselves like we know what we're doing for the most part. And we rarely hire mechanical engineers for houses.
For houses.
We're hiring Sonia for this bigger house that we're doing right now. It's very complicated.
Yeah.
So we're going to need her help. But, you know, it's an interesting question. What's that threshold? How often do you get hired? When do you recommend people hire you?
That is a great question. I think the first thing is it really depends on your team. So mm-hmm. if you as architects are really sharp, you know, Kaplan, Thompson, Briber, and you guys are in this world. So
yeah.
you recognize when it gets beyond your comfort level,
right?
Right? if you have a really great contractor who can do the energy modeling and do the equipment sizing and do the distribution systems, and you have a good relationship, you know they do good work, you know their ducts are sealed, things are installed correctly, then I feel more comfortable going without a mechanical engineer. But depending on the level of your, you know, your team, and also, you know, we're going through this paradigm change in the building industry, where now all of a sudden mechanical ventilation is being put into residential homes, which we never did before. Especially, you know, up here, we don't do forced air, right?
Yeah, right.
We have 4% openable windows, and we're good.
Right. Everything's radiant.
Yeah. So I think as we're going through this change, it'd be more likely, and it could be a mechanical engineer who just helps you at the beginning, does some initial energy modeling, helps you with the equipment sizing, gives you some design tips to consider, and then maybe checks in again later in the design to make sure everything looks pretty good, and then goes out to bid, and maybe even reviews the bids from the contractors.
Nice.
You know, and I think it's not necessarily like you get a full design, you don't need the mechanical engineer to run all your ducts or anything like that, but they should just kind of look over your shoulder and raise red flags and help with some basic calculations.
Nice. Yeah. So. Good advice. All right, what else am I missing? Anything you want to talk about, Phil?
I know we talk mostly about houses, but what about multifamily?
Right.
How does the equation change here? It certainly gets more complicated. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's, for a lot of architects doing houses, the next step is starting to do a couple...
larger multifamily. Yeah. And so
the systems change dramatically.
They get bigger, potentially, right? So, I mean, we can compartmentalize, and we could put a single-family ventilation system in every apartment, but then Chris goes, holy shit, Sonia, look at all those building penetrations. That looks awful. My amazing siding design is now compromised.
Riddled. Yeah.
It looks awful.
We consolidate this and save some...
a single?
Yeah.
So the things you get when you have a single-family system is you have boost mode, right? So when you have a high pollution event in the bathroom, you could boost it, right? But if I'm in a multifamily with a single unit that serves multiple homes, I don't get that option.
Right.
Okay. Similarly, if I'm turning it down, so let's say I have one apartment that's full of kids and they're cooking a lot of pasta.
Yes.
And then the next apartment, I have a single, slightly older person.
Yes.
Right? Well, they all get the same ventilation rate. I mean, so you could rebalance the system so that they get less. So either you turn down or turn up as a building and back down. And so those are things you have to consider. I would say on the balance, it makes sense to go with a consolidated system for cost reasons. And then you just have to have a smart balancer. And then we talked about the continuous commissioning.
Mm-hmm.
It really makes sense to go back and check it seasonally.
Gotcha.
Or as tenants change.
But if I had a developer and a client or whatever combination of that, and they were adamant that no, everyone's going to have their own, there's autonomy, each unit's a condo or something like that, and then that would behoove the architect to sort of design the exterior so that these features, these penetrations are thought about and not like missing from the elevations, and then
and that's a great point. If you have a homeowners association, it's a condo.
True. Yeah.
Who's going to pay the electricity for the...
Right. It can get complicated.
It can get very complicated. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's interesting. Do you think there's greater efficiency overall, you know, from an alien looking down at the planet and looking at this one building saying, what's the better thing to do?
Well, ironically, in almost any other case, the larger you get economies of scale.
Right.
But I have found in my relatively limited experience that with the larger boxes, you get lower efficiencies. So I'm not going to get 92%. On 1200 CFM than more.
So there might be more hardware and more product installed, but then it will be at 90% as opposed to...
Right. But now, and so now when you're getting those lower efficiencies, you're probably talking about some sort of duct-mounted coil to condition the air, to heat it up or cool it down when it's really cold outside, because you're getting that too cool air.
Gotcha.
So.
All right.
That would definitely be a time to bring in a mechanical engineer. If you're going multifamily, that would definitely be the right time.
Oh, yeah. If you're an architect doing a multifamily without a mechanical engineer,
scared.
Bush league. you need to get your act together. We're talking to you. All right. I don't know. Phil, you feel good? Sonia, you feel good?
I feel great.
You feel like we covered?
Another cocktail. I feel better.
Hey.
All right.
We can help you out.
I have an idea. So let's...
Yeah?
Let's play a rockin' song to close out the podcast.
Fantastic.
And mix Sonia Barrantes.
Beautiful.
Another cocktail.
All right. Who do you have, Phil? Who's your... What should we be listening to in studio now?
One of my favorite current rock bands, Titus Andromachus.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
One of my best friends in the world, Brandon Tess, that's his call sign, Stickles, Navy pilot.
Yeah.
Stickles, yeah.
His brother is the lead singer.
It's the lead singer.
Oh,
no,
my God.
Shit.
Like, this is
just name my name.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All you have to
Patrick
tell him.
Stickles.
I can't
you didn't,
tell
you didn't even know, did you?
I had no idea.
No.
And Tess is like one of my favorite people in the whole world.
Well, buckle up, Sonia.
Well,
we're gonna...
have you heard their new album?
I have not.
It's called A Most Lamentable Tragedy. It's a rock opera. And there's like, I don't know, like 46 songs on it.
Holy
crap. It's crazy. It's awesome. And there's a song on it which I just love. It's my rock anthem for the year. It's called Dimed Out.
It's pretty heavy.
Can you tell me what Dimed Out means?
No, it sounds like it has something to do with pot. And I'm not...
No. It's when you turn it up to 10.
Oh, nice.
You dime
this
it out.
This goes to 11.
That's right.
Exactly.
This goes to 11.
Nice.
So we're going to close it out with Titus Andromachus.
Great.
Dimed out.
I'm feeling good.
Sonia, it's been a pleasure.
You just got
pleased.
All right.
Cheers.
Cheers.